this week on the Red Sneaker Writers Podcast?
I mean, I will say that usually what I offer writers at the start of their career is commiseration rather than advice, because I empathize so much with that time when you are starting to work on something and you're interested in it and you feel like no one else is interested. It's kind of a terrifying time. So I don't offer a lot of advice. I mostly offer commiseration.
Welcome to the Red Sneaker Writers Podcast. News, interviews, and writing tips for people who are serious about having a writing career and want some practical knowledge to help them achieve it. Your host is the nationally best-selling author of more than 50 books, William Bernhardt.
Hello, sneakers, and welcome back to the podcast. This time we have a very special midweek edition of the podcast with a very special guest, and I mean Daniel Handler, who you may know as Lemony Snicket. Why the special edition? Well, because this is WriterCon week, of course, and as you already know, if you listen to this regularly, WriterCon, our annual writers conference, begins this weekend. That's September 3rd through 6th, Labor Day weekend, and it is not too late to register. This takes place in Oklahoma City, but if you don't want to travel or it's too late to make travel plans, you can stream the whole thing from home. You don't even have to watch it live because all the sessions will be recorded and placed online for a month. You can watch at your convenience. We are going to have more than 60 people presenting. That's authors, agents, editors, publishers, publicists, book marketing experts, and not just anybody. We're talking the top professionals in their field. More than 80 sessions going on at this conference, which you can watch live or stream. You know, if you've been watching this podcast very long, you know what's been happening in the book world during the lockdown. Specifically, book sales have been soaring. I mean, seriously soaring in almost every category. This could be a great time for writers. In fact, I'm going to argue this weekend that this is the best time there's ever been for authors and for breaking into the writing business. But that only works if you have the knowledge you need to help you succeed. And these people at WriterCon, I mean, I'm a little biased, obviously, but I think it's the best and brightest conference around, not only because of the quality of the speakers, but because of their generosity, their willingness to sit down, share what they know, reach out, and help the next generation of writers achieve their writing dreams. And if that wasn't enough reason to be there, one of those 60 people attending and speaking at WriterCon is my sound engineer and cohort on this podcast, Jesse Ulrich. You're going to be there, aren't you, Jesse?
Indeed, I am. I'm going to be talking about why authors should have won, of course, turn their books into audiobooks and how that process works, and also why, as authors, they should have podcasts as a way to connect with their audience.
And who would know more about that than you? I mean, seriously. You've been doing my audiobooks and a lot of other people's audiobooks, and you've been doing this podcast, obviously. So you know what you're talking about.
I'm very excited.
I should say that we're also going to do another edition of this podcast live on Saturday. I have no idea how that's going to happen. Jesse, have you figured that out yet?
Not until I see the space. I, you know, in theoretical terms, I know how we're going to do it. But in practice, it's always a little more complicated. So I'm just going to bring all of my equipment 90 miles down from Tulsa and, you know, pray a little prayer and hopefully everything will be fine.
See, he's just building up the excitement. He wants you to turn up and see if we crash and burn on this, but yeah. That'll be Saturday afternoon during the conference. I should say, again, not too late to register, not too late to get in to come in person or to stream the whole thing. If you're interested, please visit our website, which is writercon.org, WriterCon.org. For that matter, if you're just interested in post-conference viewing, you could even sign up for that after the conference takes place. If you would like to check out this fabulous schedule for yourself, you can do that too, either on the website or download the phone app, which is WriterCon 2021. Wherever you get apps, the App Store if you're on an iPhone, Google Play if you're on an Android, it's free. Download it. Look over the schedule. Look over the presenters. I can just about guarantee you will see something that could benefit your writer career. I hope you'll be inspired to join us because this is going to be a great conference. All right, enough with that. Let's get to this superb, super duper interview guest that we have, which is Daniel Handler, who, as I said, you may know as Lemony Snicket. His books are beloved and have been for a long time by millions of both adults and children all over the world. He sold more than 70 million copies of his books, a number that just makes me reel. They've been translated into over 40 languages. They've been adapted to screen, I think a couple times. They've been adapted to the stage. And now he's got a brand new book, which just came out yesterday. And who's got him first? We do. This is a brief standalone novel, he says, written for all ages, called Poison for Breakfast, which is the true, although I'm kind of putting snicker quotes around the word true story, because we're talking about a pseudonym, true story of a single day in the life of Lemony Snicket, one that begins with a puzzling note under the door that says, "You had poison for breakfast." Is not that not the perfect setup for a crime novel, or what? Here's what Publisher Weekly said about it. Snicket returns with a delightfully quirky philosophical novel. He reminisces about, among other things, the craft of writing, which, of course, is what we here at the Red Sneaker Writers Podcast are all about. Please welcome to the podcast, Daniel Handler, Lemony Snicket. Hey, Daniel, Hello. Are you there?
I'm right here. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks so much for joining us. Congratulations on the new book.
Well, thank you very much. It feels wonderful to have it go out into the world.
No doubt. All right. Here's the traditional first question I always ask our guests on this show.
Ready, embracing myself.
it's going to completely knock you flat, but here it comes. Okay. If you could offer a writer one piece of advice, what would it be?
I mean, I will say that usually what I offer writers at the start of their career is commiseration rather than advice. Because I empathize so much with that time when you are starting to work on something and you're interested in it and you feel like no one else is interested. It's kind of a terrifying time. So I don't offer a lot of advice. I mostly offer commiseration. But if I had to offer advice, I guess I would just say that you should take a lot of notes. I carry a notebook with me wherever I go. Mm-hmm. Because I never know when something is going to occur to me. And because I just kind of like to get into the habit of writing all the time. So I write, you know, almost continuously throughout the day, whether I'm focused and working on a project or whether I have to do other things, but I have a tiny little moment of time. I think even if you write a sentence that has nothing to do with anything, you're kind of keeping in practice. And I mean, I think the more you write, hopefully the better you get at it. Anyway, that's what I'm working from. I write all the time in the hopes of getting better.
That's what we all like to believe.
Yeah.
I noticed that notebook you're holding is made of like actual paper, and you mentioned a pencil.
I'm an analog writer. I write all my books on legal pads. Well, really? They actually start out on notes on index cards. Mm-hmm. But they graduate to a legal pad before they reach a typed manuscript. I don't want to write on a machine in which that is also my email and my telephone and my distraction. You know, I don't want to write on a machine that is also my movie theater and my magazines. And so I like unplugging from that a lot. And also I like the freedom of a piece of paper where you can cross out a word, but you can cross it out lightly because you're not sure you cross it out. You can go back and circle it, meaning, oh no, maybe I want that word after all. As opposed to like a digital document where what's the first thing that it does? It says like, it wants you to give it a title. You know, and you're like, I kind of have an idea. And the first thing that the computer says, okay, what are we going to call it? And I think, just leave me alone for a minute. I don't even know what it is yet. So I'm a big analog writer, yeah.
A computer's kind of a bully. So are you serious? No word processors enter into your writing process?
Well, when I've written it all on legal pads, then I transfer it into a computer.
Okay, so you're not actually typing on an old Smith Corona or something like that.
I do have an old typewriter that I use sometimes, but you know, for a while, I even was trying to correspond with publishers in an analog way. And finally, I was convinced that it was sheer torture for the people receiving it. And I try not to torture too many people at once.
Right.
So, so it does get into the computer eventually, but the creation aspect of it, I don't like to use a computer.
Yeah, that makes a certain amount of sense. So then what does a writing day look like for you? I mean, do you make yourself write every day or how's that work?
I do. Yeah, I write every day. I used to kind of take weekends off, but mm-hmm. certainly during the pandemic when no one could tell a weekend from a weekday anyway, I just right. kind of gave up and said, why do I have to pretend that I'm having a wonderful Saturday when I'm having the same grim interior Saturday right. that everyone else is having? But yeah, I mean, I get up in the morning. You don't want to know my whole daily schedule, but I start writing in the late morning, I would say, and then I continue for kind of as long as I can. Mm-hmm. I like to think that I knock off work when everyone else wants to knock off work, you know, like 3-4 o'clock. Everybody else needs with a real job needs to fake it for a couple more hours at least, but I can knock off when I do it. But yeah, I write, I try to write as long as I can, 5 or 6 hours. And I like to write mostly out of the house. I like to go to a library or to a cafe. Yeah. Or even like a crappy diner, someplace that's around people doing other things. I like being around that. I like feeling less lonely. And I like, if I'm looking for something random is more likely to pop into my eyes or into my ears if I'm out and about. So that was another thing that I've missed over the pandemic time.
Sure. Where
mm-hmm. going someplace else. I used to pathetically like take a walk around the block so I could pretend I was on some commute and re-enter my home. That was very sad. That was a sad time for this writer.
I've taken walks when I was thinking about a book too, but then I start kind of talking to myself and trying out, and then I start worrying that the neighbors all think I'm crazy.
Yeah, you know, more than once I've been tempted to buy a Bluetooth thing that fits on my ear, like, and not connect it to anything.
A fake one, right.
When I talk to myself, there's some excuse for it. But I mean, I do take a lot of contemplative walks too, but I really like being outside the house. So I have a couple of friends who are writers, and sometimes we will go to a cafe together and kind of like share a table to keep each other honest. Make sure we're mm-hmm. both working. That's kind of a nice thing. Or I like going to the library because there's, you know, there's these big tables and everyone's at them and they're all doing different stuff. And I kind of like being surrounded by the First Amendment in that way.
Right.
yeah. So that's my writing day. I have a job, so I'm lucky. I don't have to steal time from everything else that I'm doing. I'm
right.
super privileged and lucky to get to write for a living. So
you prefer to be among people when you're writing, which I think may be somewhat unusual, and particularly for you. I mean, when you walk into that library or coffee store, people must know who you are. Doesn't that make it harder?
I mean, sometimes I live in San Francisco, which is also where I grew up. And so when I'm recognized, as often as not, it's like, you went to high school with my sister or something. You know, it's not.
Okay.
But I mean, I think I get a little bit of like local weatherman recognition. I would put it up with there where someone's like, you're that guy. And then I'm like, here I am. but you know, it's not Beatlemania. I'm not like hiding in a phone booth from screaming fans. If someone sees me working, I hope they leave me alone. But another nice thing about analog writing is that if you are hunched over a legal pad with a Unipol pen and some index cards scribbling, you look like a crazy person. You look like a Unabomber. So everyone says, I'm sure that's like a murderous manifesto. I don't want to know. I don't want to get close to that guy. Right. So that really helps.
Now, when I'm on an airplane or whatever, meeting somebody for the first time and say, I'm a writer, inevitably, or at least very often, I get back, oh, have you written anything I've read? which makes you want to say, well, how would I know? But as soon as you say Lemony Snicket, that's got to connect with a lot of people out there.
I guess sometimes. I mean, frankly, I don't, particularly on an airplane, I don't like to start a conversation on an airplane because then you might be trapped. What if it's a boring conversation? What are you going to say? Oh, it's my stop. I'll just get off here now.
Doesn't work.
I forgot to tell you, I'm the alternate pilot. I need to go up to the cockpit now. See you later. No, there's no way to get out of it. Sometimes when I don't want to tell people what I do, I say that I'm in rhetoric, which is not untrue, but sounds so confusing that everyone just says, that guy's crazy, I'll leave him alone.
All right, they don't want to follow up and admit that they don't know what that means, so.
Yeah, and also I think for a lot of people, they kind of know the phrase Lemony Snicket, but I think it sounds a little bit like Spider-Man or something to them. So if I said, yeah, I'm Spider-Man, you know those movies about Spider-Man? That's me.
There are worse things than being confused with a superhero, I would think.
Yeah, I guess so, but I think it's more that it's disbelief, it's shrugging disbelief, which is also not a great conversation starter. So I keep a fairly low profile in terms of wandering around bragging about my career.
Okay, now I know that asking someone, where do you get your ideas, is like the most trite question imaginable. But in your case, I mean, I've almost got to. Was there a morning when you woke up and said, I know, a series of books for young people, except no happy endings, it'll just be one miserable thing after another? Where did that come from?
I mean, what kind of two things happened. One is that I was working on a novel that was not going well. I was working on a novel that I wanted to be a Gothic novel in the tradition of like old Gothic literature, which I'd always admired. And I was trying to write a kind of modern approximation of it or kind of a satirical thing. And it kept feeling like a Saturday Night Live skit or something, you know, like funny for 3 minutes and then not interesting. And I was quite frustrated with it. And so I kind of put it aside. And it was just when my first novel was being published. My first novel is called The Basic Eight. It's about a girl in high school. She has a crush on a guy and he's not interested. And so she bludgeons him to death with a croquet mallet. It's, you know, a comedy basically. And
that's right.
And because it is set in a high school, some editors said, would you be interested in writing something not just about young people, but for young people? And that it was then a kind of wake up in the morning moment, because I realized that children were kind of a perfect helpless hero situation for a Gothic novel, right? Like the classic Gothic novel is like a woman is married to a mysterious stranger and he lives out in the middle of nowhere.
Right.
And because at the time society was built in such a way and still is in many cases, in such a way that would make the woman completely helpless. I was trying to write
a new
version of it. And I kept thinking like, why doesn't she just call a cab? Like she's stuck out here. Why doesn't she just leave? And so I began to think of them as children and that really helped me. And so, I mean, I thought it was a terrible idea. I didn't think anyone was interested in it. And it still kind of boggles my mind that so many people have said, oh, yes, terrible things happening to children over and over again. That sounds fun.
Let me say 13 books in the series of unfortunate events. Is that right?
13 books in a series of unfortunate events. There are 4 books and All the Wrong Questions. There are a few little satellite books around both of those series that comprise the universe. And now, I just happen to have it next to me. Is this
me too.
Rebecca. That's so weird. What a coincidence. I'm trying to turn it so the lovely golden Lemony Snicket hits the light, which is a little tricky.
There. Fantastic.
Ooh, yeah.
So let's talk about that one. I mean... Okay. Is this intended toward the same audience, maybe the same audience grown up now as Series of Unfortunate Events, or who do you see as the reader for this book?
It's for anyone, I think, who's interested in thinking about death, which I think about a lot, and also about literature and other things that make life worthwhile as we wait for death to claim us. Mm-hmm. So... when I was a child, I began thinking about death, and I enjoy talking about death to young people who would like to talk to me about it. But yes, it's true. Even though I remain the same age that I was in 1999 when I first published, I am told that some of my readers have gotten older.
Isn't that weird? Yeah.
Produced children and or literature themselves. And so I think there are people who are picking this, beginning to pick this book up now because they're curious. They say, oh yeah, that guy. Mm. But I was just more interested in making a book in the Snicket world that felt very contemplative and philosophical. That just mm-hmm. felt like something I hadn't done before, and I was curious to try it. And I mean, one of the many, many lucky things in my life is to feel that I can experiment any way that I like.
Right.
And so I try to take advantage of that luck by doing it.
Sure. I see that there are people on Facebook and YouTube posting comments. Let me just say that if any of you have a question you'd like put to Daniel Handler, here's your chance. Just type it into the chat box and we will ask the question. Okay.
I can't see the chat box myself, but I believe it's there.
It's there. Trust me. So
you got the chat box. Don't stop by my home unexpectedly and ask me questions.
That doesn't go as well. Not as good.
Yeah.
Okay. So as you just showed us, this book is attributed to Lemony Snicket.
Yeah.
And as in that copy I just read, it purports to be the true story of a beloved fictional narrator.
Yeah.
Is any of this true? Is it a true story?
I mean, really, just about all of it is true. So much of the book is tied to this world that we're all tied to. It's why there's some notes in the back of the book. It's because there's some other works of literature and some movies and some music that I reference mm-hmm. in the book. And I wanted everyone to know that that was real so they might go and find it if they were interested in such a thing. And many of the things that happen in described in the book as happening autobiographically happened in fact to me. The book begins a little bit with talking about a time by a lake which happened to me in my childhood. I've actually been thinking about it a lot because the lake was Lake Tahoe, which is ravaged by fire now and in danger. And so in thinking of that community and in worrying about them, I have remembered that time, but my family borrowed a house that was on the shores of Lake Tahoe. And we were told, if you don't feed the geese, they'll leave you alone. And the geese didn't leave us alone. They were on the beach the whole summer. And it was because in the morning I would wake up early and I would make an extra piece of toast and I would feed it to the geese. And I just loved having the secret of doing that. Well, the rest of my family was completely baffled and kind of enraged that the geese would hang out. And only I knew that they were hanging out because I was giving them breakfast. And so many of the incidents in the book are like that. They closely model my own life, even as they are attributed to my fictional counterpart.
Okay. So then at this point, it seems the obvious question would be, what's the difference between Lemony Snicket and Daniel Handler? Is there a difference? How do they differ from one another?
Well, we're both very handsome. We both, I think, read perhaps too much. We're both prone to philosophical digression. Lemony Snicket is the member of a secret organization that is been shattered over time and is often in desperate and melodramatic circumstances. And I tend to be in a more watered down version of that entire arc, shall we say. So yeah, there's similarities and differences, but I think they're blurriest in this book if people are really interested in that aspect of it. But I don't know if people are. I think the idea is to think about these stories and to walk away from them with your own experience and your own reaction rather than trying to pin them down. But I don't know, maybe people are interested in pinning them down.
I think people are going to be interested in both. Okay, we've got a question. This comes from Amy M. Lee, who I know for a fact is a fine author herself. She's written the Snow Trilogy, which is a series of historical fiction novels involving a Vietnamese heroine. But anyway, the question is, Daniel, if you could write something outside your comfort zone, what would it be? And she's suggesting erotica. Romance? What would it be?
I don't know why she's assuming erotica or romance is outside my comfort zone. That seems a rather chaste summation of me. And in fact, a recent novel of mine for adults, All the Dirty Parts, which was actually supposed to be published for teenagers, but as the climate grew more and more panicky about teenagers and sex, it was moved over to adults. So, and that has quite a lot of sex in it. So I'm not sure that would be outside my comfort zone. I mean, this book started out being outside my comfort zone because I'd never written anything kind of non-fictional or philosophical before, but then I really liked doing it. So I have a pretty wide comfort zone. I started out as a poet and I haven't written poetry for a long time, and that it would kind of terrify me to go back in there again. I would feel very self-conscious about it, and it would take a lot of work to do it well. So that might be outside my comfort zone. I don't know. That's a good question. But I think to be outside my comfort zone, really, it would have to be something other than writing. I really enjoy writing. So maybe, you know, if you took me like camping in a remote, difficult terrain, that would be far, far outside my comfort zone.
Yeah, that's a different kind of comfort zone.
Yeah.
You know, you mentioned poetry in this book. I remember the note that points out that Emily Dickinson was a real person.
Yeah. Well, you never know. Some people don't know. Emily Dickinson's in there. Elizabeth Bishop's in there. Yeah, there are quite a few poets in there.
Someone else is now suggesting karaoke might be the thing that's outside the comfort zone.
I haven't done karaoke in quite some time. I'm not, but properly lubricated, I guess is the euphemism, in the proper establishment, I will indulge in karaoke. I had kind of a traumatic time once doing karaoke that I will share, if you don't mind.
No, please.
But I was at a birthday party. I was in New York, where I don't live. And I was invited to a birthday party by someone who was going to be there, but I didn't really know the many of the celebrants. But I decided I'll just go anyway. And it was in a karaoke lounge. And I went there, and I was having a perfectly fine time, but I really knew hardly anyone in the place. Then I went to use the bathroom, and I came back, and I walked in, and someone was on stage singing a song that I knew. And so I thought to myself, why not join in? And I grabbed the microphone and began singing harmony with her, and she seemed to take it okay. And then I turned around and looked at the audience, and I realized instantly that it was a church group, a very formally dressed church group, and that I had, in fact, entered the wrong room. I'd re-entered the wrong party because I didn't look that carefully because I didn't know anyone. And so as far as the church group was concerned, they were listening to some member of their community sing, and then some guy walked in, grabbed the microphone and began singing along, and then stopped in astonishment, put the microphone down and left. So that was kind of outside my comfort zone, I guess. I felt uncomfortable.
But at least you knew the song, right? So
yeah.
They thought you did?
It was a pop song. I don't have to go into it now.
I think we're having karaoke night at WriterCon this weekend, and I'm sure that's why they're asking about this. We need to get you out to WriterCon, if for no other reason, so you can do karaoke.
I would be delighted. Why not? I haven't been to Oklahoma City in quite some time. It would be nice to revisit it.
Oh, you're long over. I'm going to remember that you said that when we're planning for next year. Yeah. Okay, now I just told everyone the premise of this new book, Poison for Breakfast. You know, it kind of sounds like a mystery story. Is it a mystery?
I mean, it's shaped like a mystery, and my favorite mysteries tend to grasp the hem of a larger mystery. You know, I think like The Long Goodbye, for instance, by Raymond Chandler, one of my favorite books in the world.
Great book.
Like a mystery, but it ends up kind of grasping a large mystery of friendship and other relationships and what we're able to do for each other. And so I think in that way, Poison for Breakfast counts as a mystery because it starts with a threat of murder and there's some clues and there's some detection. But I think it pretty goes into the kind of larger, deeper philosophical mysteries. So if you like that kind of mystery, then yes, it is a mystery.
Well, I was just about to say that I think this book actually raises and addresses, I don't want to make it sound boring. It's not, but there are a lot of serious philosophical questions addressed in this book, right?
That's the idea. It felt like the kind of nonfiction book that I like, which is kind of chewing over various ideas. And that's also something that's lacking in a lot of children's literature, right? Like nonfiction for children is often like the history of the civil rights movement or Lizards of North America. And of course, God bless both those things. But there's a lot of nonfiction for adults that is more contemplative, that's more about an author's personal experience and what it might mean and how to convey that. And I thought that would be an interesting thing to share with young people. I thought it would be unusual.
So do you see parents picking up this new book for children or just, you know, the grown-up children who are perhaps now parents?
I mean, I think anyone can pick it up. There's certainly nothing that children would be afraid to read. I'm curious to see who picks it up. I don't know. It's only been out for a day. So far I've heard from a handful of people who like it.
But the first day was terrific, I bet.
Yeah, it was good. It's a little startling because I do like going on tour for a book. I've been lucky enough to work with publishers who often send me out on the road. I enjoy meeting readers. And of course, because of, I don't know how many people out there are keeping track of the news, but there's been a pandemic lately. I don't know if anyone's caught that. Yeah. You should Google it later and you'll find out. It's pretty shocking.
Oh, my.
And so I haven't been traveling. I am going to be traveling a little bit for this book as time goes on. But usually on a publication day, I'm kind of someplace that isn't my home. And I'm meeting people who are interested in reading these books. And whether it's a tiny little turnout where we're talking intimately of literature or whether it's a big roaring crowd, I always enjoy it. And so it's been a little strange to instead be back in my office and addressing people on camera. So I am very curious to see what people think of the book. It makes me excited when I am able to see the kind of physical act of anyone picking it up and looking at it, or sometimes seeing someone sitting and reading it. That's always fun. So I hope to see that more as things open up and as people go out more into the world again.
Well, you have clearly been a huge success as a writer, which is probably why it's fun to go on tour, because people actually show up and want to talk to you and whatnot.
Well, that's true. But, you know, sometimes when it's a small group of people, it actually feels like a more magical experience because it doesn't feel like you need to entertain a gazillion people at once. Instead, it feels like people are there to kind of have a bona fide conversation and talk about literature. So I've had small groups before. I mean, I think the publisher gets nervous if they've flown you to a city and it's not paying for itself, as they say.
Right, of course.
But I am kind of, I don't really mind. I enjoy visiting schools where I'm sent to. I enjoy kind of the whole thing. I like the shape of writers going out and meeting people who might be interested in reading their work. Mm-hmm.
So by my count, you got to be hovering somewhere around 20 books. There were 13 of The Unfortunate Events and 4 of The Wrong Questions. And you've mentioned several standalones.
It's more than 20 Lemony Snicket books, and it's an additional handful of books under my own name. So I like them a 30 range somewhere, I think. But it feels unhealthy to know how many books you've written, you know?
To count. Yeah.
It actually reminds me of like when you try to think, I wonder how many hamburgers I've had this year. And then you think, God, I'm going to die. Right. So you have to just stop. It doesn't feel healthy to dwell about it.
Well, where I was going was because you said that, you know, you share my myth that I must be getting better as a writer over time. So can you think of any lessons or ideas or tips or something you've learned about writing along the way?
Yeah. I mean, I think the biggest thing, the kind of biggest lesson that I've learned fairly recently in the last 6 years, maybe, is that I now put everything away for a little while before I show it to a reader or to a publisher. And so after I have a first draft that feels fairly solid, I put it away. And I'd always heard about doing that, but I think because the first person who told me that they put their books away for a year, somebody said, oh, I put it away for a year before I look at it again. And this person who told me this was a famous writer who was like super pretentious. And so I didn't believe that writer. And so then when anyone else said it, I also didn't believe them. Like whenever I heard a writer say, oh, and then I put it away, I thought, you're lying. You just turned it in late. That's all you mean. But then through a kind of logistical accident, I was working on a novel and then I kind of had to work on this other project for a while. And so I put this draft of this novel away and I was really worried about it. I was afraid it was going to like rot away as I put it away. But instead, when I looked at it, I felt so wonderful about what it was and how I wanted to change it. And so now I basically schedule that out. I'll write a first draft and I'll put it away. And then I'll write another draft of something else and I'll come back and I'll look at the old thing. And it's been really, really powerful. And it's hard to do the first time, I think. I mean, I don't know if you do that, but it's hard to let go of it. But you really come at it with such a clean mind when you come back to it that I wholeheartedly recommend it.
Well, you've got to have the luxury of time, no deadline looming over or something like that.
Yeah, for sure. But I mean, deadlines are often of your own making. I mean, there may be a deal that you've signed with a publisher, but I think even then you can try to get ahead of yourself so that you can go back. But I felt that to make edits when you're not in the heat, when you're not in the first flush of doing it, just makes so much more sense.
Now, I remember a case when I held back a book that the original deal fell through, and then I came back to it 2 years later to try and get it published again. And I started reading and I thought, who wrote this mess? This is this. The errors were apparent to me, but apparently they weren't when I first read it.
Yeah. And I think that it saves you on embarrassment too, because rather than someone else coming back to you and saying, there's a huge plot hole here, or there's two pages of utter nonsense going on here, instead you recognize that more yourself, and then you can feel embarrassed only by yourself in your own isolation.
Right. Since you can't see this stream, I will tell you that the Facebook chat is thanking you for sharing that, because they would never have thought of putting it away while they were doing the first draft of something else, but it sounds like a great idea.
Well, I'm glad. I'm glad this has been useful to you, Facebook citizens.
Well, here's one from YouTube, and I'll let this be our closing question.
Okay.
What's next for Lemony Snicket?
I'm working on a theater project. I'm working on bringing Lemony Snicket to the stage.
Really?
Yeah, which is another thing that is fairly new for me. I've done some stage stuff before, but this is a larger scale production, and it's been a real eye-opening challenge. And in addition, it feels a little silly now when so much theater is closed. It feels a little bit like I'm packing my suitcase for the moon colony, but we don't have a moon colony yet. But also, there's kind of the luxury of having that time too. So I'm working with a songwriter who I'm excited about. We'll reveal the name of the songwriter publicly when everything is when all the I's are dotted. But I've been receiving songs from the songwriter, and that's been so wonderful.
Oh, how
back and forth, and yeah, it's been a really magical experience.
So it's a musical. This sounds terrific.
It is a musical. Yeah, expect it. You know, on stage someplace in years. Meanwhile, do something else. Like, I guess that's what I say. Don't wait outside the theater now, because we're in the baby.
Right. Is this related to unfortunate events or something new?
No, it's a whole new Snicket thing.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
And I'll add one last question of my own. What's next for Daniel Handler?
Well, I am, speaking of my comfort zone, we keep coming back to Amy Lee, but I am doing something that I never thought I would do, which is that I'm writing a memoir. I began to have a conversation with someone about another project, and it turned into a memoir of a kind of specific angle of my life. And I've never done that before. It's really been tricky. It's hard to look at your own life the way you look at a story and say, okay, what are the good parts? Because the good parts to you are very personal and you don't know what they are. But I've been having fun exploring that, and that will be out, I don't know, in a couple of years maybe.
Well, I'll look forward to reading it. I thought Poison for Breakfast was terrific. Just compulsive read that goes down like a drink of water. You just can't stop reading, but why would anybody be surprised? I bet this is going to be another tremendous success for you.
Well, thank you. It's just a success to hear pleasant words like that from you. So now I'm successful.
Daniel, thanks so much for being on the podcast.
Thanks for having me on. Thanks for listening, folks who are listening. And for those who aren't listening, you can't hear me, so it doesn't matter. Right.
Jesse, I just want to say one more word. You knew you weren't going to get out of this podcast without me mentioning WriterCon again. Look at that schedule. Look at the app. Go to the website. This could be your chance to take advantage of everything going on in the book world right now. Take your writing career to the next level. Commit. Like I always say, It starts with the first step or the second step or the third step. What matters is that you don't quit. So take a look at the schedule. The app is called WriterCon 2021 and the website is writercon.org. Until next time, keep writing. And remember, you cannot fail if you refuse to quit. And I hope to see you at WriterCon or see you on the next podcast. Bye-bye now.